Before we get going, Kendrick, could I just highlight something on the document real quick? So this is all 11 point font right here. And then it switches to 10 point and bold as if I won't notice. And then it goes back to 10 unbold.
It's really all over the place.
Look, Josh, I am not a spreadsheet whisperer or a Google Doc, Google Doctor, so I don't understand how formatting works. Just be glad that there's anything in here.
Google Doctor.
1, 2, 3, hit it, boy!
To get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh! Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot across the freaking street and say that until he's gonna get you!
Hello, and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Kendrick Martin.
And I'm Josh Carter. Today, we are going to be covering The Sixth Sense, written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, what we're going to do here is an in-depth breakdown of a movie starring Bruce Willis. Talk about it from both a film perspective and from the perspective of his individual contributions. We'll add the movie to our rankings, talk trivia, and do the Wheel of Willis. Joining us today is a special guest. Drumroll, please.
Drumroll.
Wow. Wow, I heard something. It's Katie! Hey.
Hello, Katie.
Hello.
And how are you doing today, Katie?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And dear listener, not only do we have a special guest for this special episode, but we have two special guests for this special episode. Also joining us today is Amy.
Woo! Hello!
Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty pumped to be here with you guys.
I am really excited to talk about this movie. When you think of Bruce Willis, this is probably one of those movies that really comes to mind, I think, for him. This is an Armageddon, which we did fairly recently, but this is probably what I think.
And Die Hard, for sure. But it's definitely iconic, for sure.
I'm pretty sure that I think of Mercury Rising, Striking Distance. What are you guys talking about? Those are the best. Yeah.
Mercury Rise.
And North. North is definitely
North.
Yeah, North.
Katie, had you seen
North? No, I didn't watch it because you told me not to in the podcast. You said it's too racist to watch.
Well, thanks for listening to us.
If you recall, I gave it a Bruce space, so hopefully over the course of time, you will eventually realize that I was right.
Sure.
And the movie is racist, but worth watching.
Okay,
so,
all right. You know. I'll consider it.
Well, we're not going to be talking about that movie today, but if you're interested in listening to our discussion of North, you can find all of our previous episodes over at williswaypod.com. You can find other podcasts in the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network over at lastoftheactionheroes.com. If you want to support this podcast and continue the trend of talking about North in a semi-positive light, the best thing you can do is head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a star rating. And once you do that, tell the next person you see to leave us a star rating, and by the transitive properties, we should have multiple star ratings. I'm not a
galaxy of ratings, you may say.
Yeah, right. Multiple stars is a galaxy. I'm not a rating master, but I think that's how that works.
Well. Before we dive into discussing the movie, we try to give you an idea on if this movie is worth watching in the first place. Not every Bruce Willis movie is as good as North, unfortunately. So we're trying to kind of give you a barometer for how to judge movies and see whether or not you should go watch it before listening to the rest of the podcast, or whether you should, you know, pause the podcast, pull over on the side of the road if you're commuting, load up the movie on your phone and watch it. Tell your boss that you're going to be late, and then listen to the rest of the podcast once you're done. So, Kendrick and Amy and Katie, what we do here is we rate a movie, a Bruce Willis out of a Bruce Willis. If it gets over a Bruce, it means that we recommend it. And if it gets under that, it means that we don't. And then however many letters it gets is the amount of goodness with which we associate with it. Do you all have a rating in mind for this movie?
I got mine.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Amy, what would you rate this movie if you're rating it out of a Bruce Willis?
Okay, I am thinking a Bruce W.
A Bruce
like
W.
Like solid. Bruce W. It's just kind of, it's kind of like, yeah, I'll watch it again. Like give or take. Just
okay.
All right.
Yeah, Bruce W. I will also preface that I am not a thriller, like scary movie type of person, but I will watch it if it's like offered.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Katie, what about you?
So I'm going to give this actually a Bruce Willie because...
Bruce Willie.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I'm just thinking of all of Bruce Willis's movies, like, and that's how I'm kind of rating it. And I think this is one of his best ones.
Kendrick, what about you?
I am right there with Katie, also a Bruce Willie. And I like Katie models the correct way to think in that you have to rate this among Bruce Willis's works.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, we'll never reach a full Bruce Willis. I say that, though, but really there's no way to... There's no wrong way. There's no wrong way to Bruce Willis. This rating system gets a full rating system out of rating systems as far as how a rating system works.
That's hilarious.
Josh, what about you?
Yeah, I'm actually going to give this a full Bruce Willis. I think that it is.
Wow.
Yeah,
I know.
Wow.
I had looked and I've given 12 Monkeys also a full Bruce Willis, and I think that that also deserves it. But I really like this movie. The script is really, really tight, and yeah. The storytelling of M. Night in this movie is just amazing. He is firing on all cylinders here, and Bruce Willis is great, and all the supporting cast is great. So, yeah, this movie gets a full Bruce Willis from me.
Wow.
That is pretty great. Pretty great. Before we go on... I know we all rewatched it for this podcast, or watched it, I guess, but who had everybody here seen it before? Josh, is this your first time seeing it?
It was my first time seeing it last night, yeah.
I think that's a rare thing, too, to be able to see it for the first time and not know the twist, because I think...
Yeah, I didn't know the twist.
There's very few people that actually happened to, because, you know, once it, like, came out in theaters, I'm sure, like, just people knew about it, you know? So I think that is a very rare thing, and I think that probably shows why it was such a great movie.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've watched this a lot growing up, and I just, like, couldn't help but watch it, like, with the twist.
Yeah.
So no, I feel like,
know about it.
Yeah. So I think it wasn't as exciting, but, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So Katie and Amy, you both had already seen this before watching it this weekend?
Yeah, I watched it as a child, totally. And it definitely scarred me as a child.
Nice.
For reals, yeah. Especially that first scene. Oh, it brings me back to, like, sleepovers, like, sixth grade, fifth grade. It definitely is a throwback for me.
Yeah. I don't think we mentioned it up at the top. I could be wrong. But it came out in 1999, right, Josh?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
So we were pretty young.
Yeah. On the younger side. I know I saw it fairly soon after it came out, but I don't remember. I couldn't tell you when.
Yeah, I know I watched it on video, so it would have, like, already been out for a little bit.
I wish I got to see Josh watch it.
It was actually pretty fun.
Rewatching it, I hadn't seen it in a long time, and rewatching it, I was like, man, this is totally telegraphed. You're going to immediately know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it still worked.
Yeah.
I'm glad it still worked.
And before we talk any more around it, we should warn our viewers that we're going to do... This part's going to be spoiler-free at the beginning, but then after we jump into the movie, we are definitely going to be spoiling it. So We'll give you a heads up when we get to that point. You are safe as of now, but beware.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are other people out there like Josh, I'm sure. Yeah. Before we keep talking about this movie, I want to let people know that if you want to email us, you can do that by sending an email to williswaypod@gmail.com. You can also find us on social media at williswaypod. And then there's also the Facebook page for the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where all of the collected podcast might of those podcasters gets posted. So before we start talking about Sixth Sense, we're going to take a quick break. Before we talk in about the Sixth Sense, I wanted to see what people's histories with other M. Night Shyamalan movies are. I know this, I don't know if this was his first movie, but it definitely is the first one to make him famous. And he's obviously done a whole bunch since then, and his career has kind of wildly diverged. Katie, have you seen a lot of other M. Night Shyamalan movies?
I was just looking up his filmography, I guess is what you call it, and I have actually seen quite a few of them. Not more of his recent ones, but there's quite a few that I kind of have a visceral reaction to when I watch them, such as like The Happening. Thought that was horrible, but also just the content in it was not good. And remember when you made me watch Split? You kind of tricked me into that.
Yeah.
You were like, this isn't scary at all. Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah. And that didn't teach you to not trust my many opinions from
Will I ever learn?
No,
actually, Split was pretty good. That's probably one of my favorites of his. And Sixth Sense, obviously. Very good. But on his lower end, The Happening, certainly, and The Village, I think, are just not very good ones.
Yeah. Amy, you said you don't really like suspense or dramatic movies. Have you seen a lot of his other M. Night Shyamalan's movies?
Also looking at his filmography, The Sixth Sense is probably the only one that I've seen.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So I'm representing the people that don't really watch a lot of movies but do enjoy them.
Oh. You didn't see Signs? I feel like Signs is his other like similar era big notable movie. Josh, have you seen any other M. Night Shyamalan movies?
I have only seen After Earth. That's the only other one that I've seen, which is
wow.
A really, really weird one to have watched. But
wow.
There's a theater nearby where I used to live. And by nearby, I mean I lived out in the country, so it's like 6 miles away or 5 miles away. Unwalkable, but definitely drivable if you beg your parents. And they would have like a double feature, so you pay the same price and you could stay for the second movie if you wanted to, and they didn't kick you out or anything, and they would do like second run movies or whatever. So I watched that alongside some other movie that I was more interested in. I don't remember what the other movie was, but I remember hating After and being like, God, I can't wait for my movie to start.
And then you just forgot right about it.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember what it was that came out during that time frame. It was like, part of me thinks that it might have been... No, I don't even want to guess, because it's going to be wrong, and I'm going to get some correction, and they're going to be like, you're so dumb, you can't even remember what year movies came out. And I don't even need to open that can of worms, so...
No, you don't.
No.
I'm looking at his film work, and I have seen almost all of them. I have not seen The Happening. Katie told me to steer clear. And I hadn't seen the two films prior to The Sixth Sense. One's called Wide Awake and one's called Praying with Anger. I've not seen either of those. And I haven't seen After Earth either. So I dodged a couple bullets there.
So you have a pretty different opinion of M. Night Shyamalan than people that have seen all of his movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I skipped those because I saw the signs.
Looks like he is pretty breakable after all.
Yeah, I saw what was happening.
Oh, my God.
Oh, guys, we better stop. This is getting old.
Yeah, someone's going to come visit me. Okay. Glass?
All right, let's split.
Okay. But I have... seen the other ones that Bruce Willis are in, Unbreakable being that one. And so I'm excited to rewatch that one at some point. I don't think I've seen that one since I was a little kid.
I haven't seen that one since ever. So,
nice. Well, that would keep in fact with what you already said. Yep. So you're not lying.
Hey, no corrections yet.
One thing I found interesting about his work, and if you haven't seen his movies, it's you can't really make this comparison. But he loves Philadelphia, and I knew this going into watching Sixth Sense, and but all throughout that movie, it's so much Philadelphia. They just show so many shots of the city and the buildings, and they talk about Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and they talk about the history of the city, and they talk about the different parts of the city. And that is true with a lot of his movies. Like, he is very much in love with Philadelphia. Not something I noticed the first time I saw Sixth Sense, though. All right, speaking of Sixth Sense, let us begin our discussion on the Sixth Sense.
You know the accident up there?
Yeah.
Someone got hurt.
They did?
A lady. She broke her neck.
Oh my God, but you can see her?
Yes.
Where is she?
Standing next to my window.
Baby, why are you shaking? Cole, what's wrong?
Did you ever talk to your mom about how things are?
I don't tell her things.
Why not?
Because she doesn't look at me like everybody else, and I don't want her to. I don't want her to know.
Know what?
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
I don't see anything. Are you sure they're there?
Sometimes you feel it inside, like you're falling down real fast. You ever feel the prickly things on the back of your neck?
Yes.
That's them. They get mad. It gets cold.
How often do you see them?
All the time. They're everywhere. They want me to do things for them.
I think that they know that you're one of these very rare people who can see them. So you need to help them.
What if they don't want to help?
I don't think that's the way it works.
How do you know for sure?
Is anyone there?
Look out!
All right, that audio was from the trailer of The Sixth Sense. I'm going to read the description from IMDb. A boy who communicates with spirits seeks the help of a disheartened child psychologist. You can find this movie for rent on VOD, and as we said before, we are going to have a brief spoiler-free section, and then we're gonna have a spoiler expensive section. Spoiler
full.
Costly. I don't know what the opposite of spoiler
full. Spoiler full.
Spoiler full. Spoiler full. Unspoiled milk full section. Josh is already tired of my antics. This is going well. All right, so Katie, you like this movie a whole lot. Tell me if you can, in your spoiler freest method, what you really liked about this movie.
All right, I'll try. I mean, I think just like Josh was saying, the storyline is just very tight. Like it, like every single thing that they say has a purpose and ties into the overall story. And I think it does a pretty good job of just showing, like, just the depths of mental illness and things like that. Obviously, this is a sensational type of mental illness, but just like how just the despair around it and the hopelessness, I think it did a really good job about that.
Nice. Amy, you said you don't even really like scary movies or thrillers really in general, but you still usually watch this if you happen to see it on TV. Is there something specific about this movie that you find yourself really drawn to?
I think I agree with Katie. I think, and Josh, that it, you know, it's still a really good story. I think I really also enjoy Haley Joel Osment in it. I think he just was fantastic in the movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. Joshua, you gave this your full Bruce Willis.
I did.
One of your many Bruce Willises. You're really singing high praises. And plus, you were the only one who watched it for the first time.
Yeah.
What was your favorite aspect of it?
I really liked a lot of it. I think, without spoiling things, I think M. Night Shyamalan has some talents, obviously, for some storytelling. And I think that he does such a good job working around certain limitations and stuff like that. For one, the budget wasn't incredibly high with this movie, and he does a great job hiding that. You don't really notice it watching the movie. And I think that that's because he really thought through all the story. He worked hard on this movie, and you could really tell that it's a very well-crafted film. I really like that. The performances are all just amazing. They are very, very good. And the movie has a very good sense of place as well. Like the city, Philadelphia, feels very real, and it's shot in a real way too. And like, that sounds silly because Philadelphia is a real city, but it's easy to make a movie and make the city feel like it could be whatever Gennaro city, and it could have just been filmed up in Vancouver, Canada. And nobody would have known. But this movie feels very, very closely identified and tightly knit together with the real city. And I thought that was great. So there's a lot of things that I like about this movie. The suspense is really well built too with the music. And his filming is also very, very smart with the way that he uses the camera to show certain things from certain perspectives. Some of his tracking shots are also really great. Like there's one scene where it's just them in a cart together. It's Cole and his mom in a cart, and she's like pushing it, and I was like, wow, that would have been kind of hard actually to get that tracking shot done. But he did it. So there's a lot of things that I want to commend him for, and some of it is spoilery, unfortunately, but all that stuff, I loved this movie for how artfully it was done. Like, there's some dialogue that maybe is, like, a little bit clunky, but I am homeschooled, so I'm used to people talking all stiff and weird, so, you know, it wasn't that bad for me.
Completely agree. I loved all those aspects. I also really liked Toni Collette. I thought she did a really good job. She was nominated for an Academy Award for this role. This is one of, I think, two movies on the AFI Top 100 list that Bruce Willis was in, the other being Pulp Fiction. So it got a lot of critical acclaim, though limited award wins. But I think the tension is really well done, and I think it merits rewatching because, as I mentioned, the different twists, you can see kind of the track being laid for him as they get to the end. And so rewatching it with that in mind really kind of enlightened me to a few things that I'll talk about in spoilers. And yeah, it has several scenes that are so iconic. They have stuck with me my entire life. Both like terrifying scenes and just like kind of concepts that really unsettled me as a child. And this movie obviously has a huge cultural impact. You know, I See Dead People was the punchline to every comedy movie or SNL bit for who knows how long after this movie came out. So I think that just kind of really shows how much of a, you know, culturally relevant impact it had on this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for years.
And I feel like now is probably a better time to watch it than like 2005 when everybody was still making jokes about it.
Yeah, so definitely. People kind of
it's kind of died down a little bit.
Yeah,
for sure.
For years when I was exiting my bed, I would just like jump so that nobody would grab me from underneath my bed.
Yeah. Interesting thing I was reading about, but the movie Casper the Ghost came out two or three years before this did. And M. Night Shyamalan was worried that the ghost movie market would be oversaturated and thought that no one would want to see this movie.
Like Casper the Friendly Ghost?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a little different. It was friendly.
quite different. Yeah.
Yeah. These ghosts, they can be friendly or unfriendly. Okay. I feel like that's about all I want to say before we get to spoilers. Josh, is there anything you want to talk specifically pre-spoiler? I think
I'm looking through there.
One thing I guess I should say, if you're listening and you've got this far and you're not sure if you want to watch it, as we've said, it is an intense movie. There is a lot of content warnings, I guess, if you have sensitivities to death in any form or fashion. Suicide, murder, you know, be prepared for that before you watch this movie. But if you like any suspense or thriller movie and you haven't seen this movie, I would say go watch it now, because getting surprised at the end is worth it.
Yep. Yeah, and even if you know the spoiler and you are still going, nah, I'll just listen to the discussion, I don't need to watch it, I'd say I think that you're missing out and you probably should watch it. But obviously, make your own choices. You decide what you want to do.
All right, so I would say we can go full spoiler discussion here. I don't have a particular direction to go with this conversation, but one thing I was curious about, and since you guys haven't seen a lot of M. Night Shyamalan's other works, I don't know where your opinion on this would be, but he kind of, I don't know if he started, but he definitely continued the trope of using mental health as a crutch for scary aspects. Yeah. And this movie, I had kind of forgotten that element of it, but it definitely continues this concept of, like, a lot of his other movies have this thing where someone is scary and you don't know why, and at the end they just kind of wave it away with, like, oh, they have some mental health problems, that's why they were terrifying you with weird costumes or whatever. I don't have a great example, but I think his later movies, it was more egregious in kind of a derivative form to use mental health as a shorthand for scary things. But curious as to, like, how you thought. Katie, you mentioned that you thought that you liked how we got to see a little more of the mental health side of things.
I think mental health can be scary because of the unpredictability about it. You know, you don't know how a person is going to act or if they're going to be safe around you when they have, you know, mental, especially when they're so mentally disturbed like this child was, you know. And they kept wondering, why was he being abused? Like, was he doing it to himself, or was somebody else abusing him? And so that's scary too, just like the unknown aspect of it, I think, as well.
Yeah. Amy or Josh, I don't know if you had any, if you had thought that, or if you had been familiar with
I guess the drama also hits because he's like a child with it, and that's probably was really unspoken during that time.
Yeah, for sure. This is the second movie where Bruce Willis plays a psychologist, isn't it, Josh, or is it the third?
You're referring to Color of Night.
Yeah, that obviously is adult, but I'm trying to think if he did it, if he was it.
He was a plastic surgeon in that one movie.
Death Becomes Her.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was like North.
Not North. Yeah,
plastic surgeon in North. What was he in? What was he in? Mercury Rising. Was he a doctor of some kind or just a detective?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, Mercury Rising.
Oh no, he was a disgraced investigator, FBI guy. Saw his whole squadron get killed.
Oh, the boy, they killed the boy. That's right. That's right. You can tell, gals. You can tell though that movie really stuck with us. Josh probably went and saw a double feature of that and After.
Yeah. Oof.
So Josh, you obviously went into this blind for the first time. You have the freshest memory of seeing this without knowing the twist at the end.
Yeah.
Did anything give it away before Bruce Willis's character comes to the realization that he's dead, or were you like with it right until then?
So I was taking notes throughout, and the way that I take notes is sort of kind of like the free association thing that they talked about in this movie, where they're like, you just start writing stuff on a piece of paper or you just start drawing stuff and then words come out. And it's like, that's never how that's ever worked for me. I usually have to write things, but you know, maybe it's different for other people. My squiggles never just become whole sentences, but when I was writing it down, I wrote down after stuttering Stanley, so after that scene took place, I think when he said that I see dead people and they only see what they want to see, I wrote down, is Malcolm dead and he's just seen what he wants to see? And then I was like, or is Malcolm dying and then this is a vision that he's having? So I think that that's what I was thinking it was for the rest of the movie. I thought that it was all taking place like as he was there on the bed and it wasn't... It wasn't taking place in real time. That's what I thought was happening. But then I kind of forgot about that because I thought that I saw Malcolm interact with the kid's mom due to camera trickery and the rules of movie making where you think that things took place before the important scene that are regular human things, but they never confirm that those things take place. So you don't realize it. Like, so I think that I kind of put that away in my brain, and then towards the end, like after the theater scene, I wrote down, is Malcolm a ghost? With like many question marks. And then after that, I was like, oh, that's why she doesn't see him, because he's dead. And then they revealed it like the next moment. So I kind of was guessing it, but I wasn't 100% certain. And they really don't give it away entirely if you don't 100% know. If you know, then yeah, they telegraph it all throughout the movie. But I didn't know, I was kind of shook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they... I was really impressed with how they made every scene look like Malcolm had been talking to someone just before the camera came in.
Yeah.
There's a phrase for when a scene begins like mid action and it has left my brain, but that illusion really helped kind of conceal the concept that he was dead.
The other thing that I didn't even think about until later was that you just assumed that he bought a bus ticket for him and Cole, and that they just skip that scene because it's a boring transactional scene. But in reality, that never happened. And so there's all these like little things where you're like, oh my God, that's why he's not driving Cole, because he can't, because he's a ghost. So, I don't know. All that stuff was just very, very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, they did a good job of using, like, the depression of the spouse as making it seem like she was just being, like, standoffish or cold. But it was really just, like, she was so down, you know.
Yeah.
But with him, like, being present there, it just seemed like she was just mad at him. So that was really interesting, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
One of the, like, great giveaways at the end that I noticed for the first time last night was throughout the movie, you see him try to go to the basement where his study area is, where his files and everything are. And repeatedly, he tries to go to the basement and the door is locked. And he, like, searches for his keys a couple times and he can't find them. And then the camera cuts and you just kind of assume, like, oh, he found his keys later or whatever. But then at the end, they show that the study or that basement was just had furniture in front of it and he couldn't open the door because there was a bunch of furniture in front of the door. And it goes back to the whole line where Cole says, they don't know they're dead. They only see what they want to see.
Yep. Yeah. And I kept thinking the in-universe justification for the door being locked was that that was where the wine was, and she had made a comment about him not drinking as much. And so then I thought that it was her trying to be like, oh, he keeps drinking and pouring himself over his work, so I'm going to lock the door so that he thinks about it before he goes down there and gets a drink. And I was, that was my justification for it. And then once they revealed it at the end that the whole time there was something in front of it, I was like, oh my fucking God, that's amazing. Yeah. So there was a lot of like little things like that where they there's like really human reasons for why things would happen. And then once you realize the fact that they're taking advantage of, like Kendrick was saying, the way that movies are framed and the types of scenes that are shown in order to make a story good, you start to put things together. Like one of the trivia items on IMDb, for instance, was saying how Malcolm only wears like variations of the stuff that he had worn when he got shot because he's permanently stuck in those same clothes. But because it's a movie, you don't realize that it's not just a costume thing. It's a thing that's important for the story. So I love stuff like that. I love, love, love how much time was spent behind the scenes tweaking things to make things consistent and make things really work well to get to that point where they could tell this story.
Also, Bruce Willis learned to be ambidextrous so that he could use his alternate hand so that you wouldn't see his missing wedding ring.
Yep.
Amy, I'm glad you're here on this discussion because the three of us other folk were homeschooled and never set foot in an actual public school. So I had a question for you. There's a scene where a kid is writing on the chalkboard, like, I will never say dumb things again. And did you ever, was that ever a thing? Did you ever
all experience the time,
that?
All the time. No, never, never seen that.
Wow.
You were just a good student, though, Amy. You didn't have to do that.
That's true. But no, I've never seen a discipline like that.
What about detention in general? Did you ever have to go to detention?
I may have had to do detention once. But what grade is he in? I mean, I feel like detention for a little one.
You're asking homeschoolers. He's supposed to be 9 years old. You're asking homeschoolers what grade he was in. We don't know what grade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just you see a kid writing on the chalkboard and you see I thought it was detention, but I think it was his class and he's just kind of blowing his pencil back and forth, and I was like, "Oh yeah, detention. Is that a thing that happens? Do you have to write on the chalkboard?" I was really interested. That scene was pretty cool, and it was very subtle, but I assume that what we were supposed to take the takeaway was when it was a Philadelphia courthouse, they would hang potentially runaway slaves there or just people in general. I don't know why it seemed like the disagreement with the teacher on hanging people there. If it was a courthouse, obviously they hung people. So
the other, I had another question about that scene too. Because, like you're saying, that doesn't make any sense that the teacher would be all like, no.
Maybe it's a testament to what they actually teach kids in school about how things were back then.
I was like, don't lie to the kids.
Yeah. It'd be one don't thing lie. if you didn't want to mention that, you know, like, oh yeah, they also killed a bunch of people at this school, but to just flat out deny it, I was like, that seems weird.
Yeah. I also didn't really understand that, like, at one point the kid then goes, like, he tries to stand up to the teacher and then he starts calling the teacher Stuttering Stanley. A great scene, but how did the kid know that? Was there some ghost that was like, oh, that guy killed me forever ago and he stutters? Like, how did he know that?
Yeah, I guess I assumed a ghost had told him that secret when he was like, who told you that? But
yeah, that's what I assumed too. The ghosts had just been hanging out there forever and been like, oh, I saw this guy.
Just to rag on Stanley, like, all those years later.
Well, wasn't he the teacher at the end or, like, near the play that got him the part? And then he was like, when I went to school, there was a fire here.
Yeah.
So there were probably a lot of ghosts that knew of Stanley.
Oh, that's genius.
The makeup lady, I think, who was helping him with his makeup, was presumably died in the fire. I don't know. Yeah. Basically, one thing I took away from this movie was a lot of people die all the time in horrific ways, and we don't know about it.
Yep.
It happened in our, where we're at now.
Yep.
I had another question, speaking of it getting really cold. Like, in the first scene, when she's getting the wine in the basement, it, like, gets really cold. Remember, like, you can see her breath and stuff? I wonder if that, like, I don't see how that ties in or why they did that.
When that happened last night, I was, when I watched it last, I looked at it and I was like, oh yeah, does it start with him already a ghost? I don't know why it's cold down here. And then they never really explain it.
Yeah.
Also, I hadn't remembered that the guy who comes in and kills Bruce Willis at the beginning, he also had the ability to speak to dead people. I'd completely forgot that aspect. I don't know if we're supposed to assume that it's fairly commonplace or he just happened to meet two of them or what. That Donnie Wahlberg is the guy who plays that, the killer, right. I believe. Oh, Bruce Norris. No relation to Bruce Willis nor Chuck Norris is the guy who played Stanley Cunningham, by the way. Let's talk about our favorite scary scenes. So, Amy, do you have a favorite scene that you think is the scariest?
The red balloon up into the cellar.
Like when the guy's screaming in the thing?
Yeah. When he walks up the stairs at the birthday party and those two punk kids push him into that little closet. Ugh, it terrifies me. Oh, yeah, me.
Peter Zamboukas or whatever that one kid's name was.
And yeah, And then, like, the fact that the kids didn't get in trouble for being up there and pushing him in really annoyed me. And the mom was trying so hard to get him out.
Yeah, that was really sad.
It was really stressful.
Yeah, that part was intense. And also the fact that when Toni Collette, she goes up there and those kids are just standing there like, we don't know what's wrong.
I know.
And like,
why are you still standing
there? And the parents
there?
Too, when they come, they don't, it's their house. Like, they should know how to get that thing open.
Yeah, that was super intense. Katie, is that your favorite scary scene or did you have another scary
favorite
scene?
Favorite is definitely not how I would say it, but I really think, for whatever reason, it's not just because it's, like, inherently scary, but, like, whenever the little girl, just because little girls are pretty creepy, but she's in his, like, sacred, like, hideout space, so that, to me, is, like, really unnerving. Because it was like, you know, before then, I don't think he had had ghosts in there because he felt pretty safe in there. And then she just like starts like, you know, foaming at the mouth and vomiting. And it's just, I don't know, it's just horrible. And then again, she's very creepy when she grabs him from under the bed. I didn't like that.
Yeah. That whole thing where you find out her mom was.
Oh, yeah.
Her mom or stepmom or whoever that was poisoning her. That was so terrifying. That was one of those scenes that really scarred me as a child.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's also under the bed, and monsters hide under the bed.
There's like a few... There's like a few movies like that that I remember from childhood of things that like I could not do. Like it was like, could not put my foot down at the bed. And then like Outbreak scared me as a child. I like shower curtains for whatever reason, because they were always like at the jump point. Like when you pull back a shower curtain, there was like a terrifying monkey there or whatever. Like that always scared me as a child too. So those two things in my childhood were very terrifying.
Yeah. It's crazy how they affect us still to this day. Josh, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to say the top of the stairs bit. That part scared the bejeebles out of me. Yep. I think I wrote down during that scene, I was like, man, this movie's spooky.
Because I think we had seen some unsettling stuff, but nothing... nothing quite that intense.
Yep.
There's a scene early on. It's a one take, and I swear there was behind the scenes footage of this, but I could not find it, so maybe I'm making it up. There's a one take where the camera follows. It's in the kitchen with Toni Collette and Cole, and the camera follows her out of the room for a sec and then follows her back in, and all the doors and cupboards are open.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really scary, but it is very unsettling. And just to think of, like, how they pulled that off of, you know, they move the camera away for 10 seconds and come back and everything is open. And he's just like, I was looking for Pop-Tarts.
Uh-huh.
That part was pretty intense. And then the girl getting poisoned scene was pretty intense. I think all the stuff really in the house was very unsettling to me. Like where he finds the kid who had shot himself. That part was... kind of gripping, and the woman who I presume had been killed by her husband, who's angry in the kitchen, all that was like very unsettling. There wasn't just like we heard about grandma who presumably died peacefully, but we never see grandma. Everybody we see died some sort of gruesome and violent,
which M. Night kind of I think death. He kind of is, likes that kind of thing, because if you've seen The Happening, like it's just basically should be called like 500 Ways to Kill Yourself, because that is what that movie is.
Eesh.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Oh gosh.
So he's maybe a little dark.
I read that this movie also almost included a scene right after Haley Joel Osment tells Bruce Willis that he can see dead people, where they kind of pan out of the hospital and they just show everybody he can see. But the studio was like,
I'm glad they didn't include that.
Yeah. This movie was rated PG-13, I believe. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Anybody know off the top of their head?
Yeah, I was like wondering, like he probably saw people all the time. And then how did he know who was dead or alive? Like, it's just like, poor kid.
Yeah, I wonder if we could see from his point of view if you would see a the like shimmery light. Like at one point, Toni Collette looks at the pictures on the wall, and you see like a
next to
shimmering
him all the time.
Light,
yeah,
to kind of even when he's a little baby.
And there
were
some.
There were. I was like, I would never
that
frame
wall.
That.
Just like. Yeah, I know. It's so weird.
I mean, this was before digital cameras, so we just took photos and you just hoped and prayed. But there was a lot where he was not looking at the camera. I thought that was pretty wild. Funny note, Michael Cera auditioned for the role of Cole, but he did not read the he didn't know like what kind of movie it was, and the scene to audition was the magic scene, which is where he pretends to hide a quarter in his hand and in his pocket and then his other pocket in his hand and then it's back in his original hand again. And Michael Cera was like, okay, and he just did it like fully comedic, like like a funny guy. And he was like, later he was like, oh, I was supposed to be awkward and introverted. And so M. Night Shyamalan said in an interview that Haley Joel Osment, on the other hand, showed up and M. Night asked him, like, have you read your part? And he said, yeah, I read it twice. And he's like, oh, you read your line twice? He's like, no, I read the whole script twice.
I saw on IMDb he was the only one wearing a tie as well, which he almost always wears a tie in the movie. So.
Oh, yeah.
Funny.
Aw.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about the movie in general? Josh, you got any other... just general notes you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I did have another thing that I wanted to talk about. I thought that it was very lucky that Bruce Willis's injury that he got happened to have been a injury that was shot in the stomach, because the kid constantly is running away from scary, spooky things. And if he had been, like, shot in the head or something, this movie wouldn't have happened. Because Bruce Willis would be like, let me help you, kid. And the kid would be like, ah! Running away the whole time. So,
well, that and, like, his camera presence would have been, like, this creepy headless guy. And we would have been like, what are we watching?
Yep.
I guess my... like a thought that kept popping up and probably unpopular opinion, but I didn't think Dr. Crow was a very good child psychologist.
I also thought that a couple times.
It was really annoying me the whole time. I'm like, is that how you talk to children, especially ones you're trying to gain rapport with? It was very odd. But I mean, I guess they did have some type of rapport.
Yeah. I thought that a few times, and I was trying to decide, like, obviously we have to stretch the realm of believability for movies, but particularly in the beginning when that guy comes in to kill him, Vincent, Bruce Willis's character Malcolm, I felt like, did not handle that situation very well. He just kind of like seems in shock and is just thinking the whole time, like he's not really talking to the guy very much. But on the other hand, he was pretty drunk, I guess, so I gotta give him that. But I'm just thinking, you're used to talking with kids and they obviously are upset a lot of the times.
I'm sure you deal with a lot of upset kids.
I wouldn't just stand there in shock and be like, yeah.
Well, like, good is one thing, but being the best psychologist in Philadelphia.
The child of Philadelphia.
Like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, the son of Philadelphia.
I don't think we can do this whole podcast without talking about, like, the worst insult in the history of the world. Cheese dick, you know?
Which I was thinking, that... like, if you said that to a person that spoke with a Cockney accent, would they even know that you weren't calling them a cheese stick?
Probably not.
Wow. Okay. And if you said it to someone who didn't speak English, would they even know what you were saying? Like,
what part was that in?
So Bruce Willis continually catches his wife, Anna, interacting with a coworker who's kind of flirting with her. And we always see Bruce Willis kind of catching the tail end, and he shouts out like, get out of here, cheese dick, a couple times, and like yells at him a few other times. And he's always this other guy's always wearing
he does kind of look like a cheese dick, to be fair.
Oh.
Yeah, poor guy. Bless him, but go back to Tillamook where you belong.
Damn, Oregon, West Coast Comet, Josh. We're an international podcast.
Oh, right.
Be careful of who you, be careful of the inside jokes you land. Yeah, I mean, I guess one other thing I would say, and we talked about it a little bit, but all the filming is very beautiful. Like the church scenes, I thought were all really pretty. The uses of the school, I thought were all really well done. The buildings, kind of like panning around different townhomes and apartment buildings in Philadelphia, I thought all like looked great. It felt like fall. Toni Collette's red hair and like auburn sweaters really sold me on the fall cold vibes. She's wearing a wig in this, which I think is obvious, but she's wearing a wig because she had just shaved her head before this movie was filmed, and I couldn't find why, but M. Night Shyamalan said that he wanted her, and he was afraid that the studios would say, hey, she's got a shaved head. So he didn't tell them that. He's like, hey, I just want this actress. We should go with her. And they're like, okay, if it sounds good to me. And then he got her this wig. But I thought her costumes were really well worked with her character. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about? Otherwise, we'll move on. All right, so we're going to talk about our Star Trek connection. This movie has a very limited cast, and it is a small, smaller budget film, so it doesn't have a lot of extras, and I was struggling to find a Star Trek connection. Josh, what did you find for us?
Well, I found our old faithful, Tom Boyd.
We haven't had a Tom Boyd in a while.
We haven't.
For those of you who haven't listened, Tom Boyd is the oboe player who appears in almost every work
ever. Yeah.
So when in doubt, we can go to him. I also want to shout out Sally Stevens, who is a singer, and she's credited as singing in both some Star Trek movies and also in this, presumably for just background audio. Couldn't really tell. She also sang... She's credited in like 5 episodes of the American Dad TV show, 1 episode of How I Met Your Mother. So I don't know how singers get those kind of credits, but that's good old Sally Stevens.
How I Met Your Mother is Kendrick and Josh's favorite TV show, right?
That's an interesting way to look at that.
I give it an H out of How I Met Your Mother.
Wow.
I think I give it a ho out of How I Met Your Mother. Oh.
Just so you can call it a ho.
Well, presumably. No. That one theater episode where Barney puts on a show, that one's really, really funny. But overall, no, not a fan of the show. Not a fan of the show. How many episodes in a row can we bash How I Met Your Mother, by the way, Kendrick? Do you think we could go for like a...
I think we could start a trend.
Okay, that sounds good.
Wow.
We'll start a whole segment about it.
Well, at least until we get some nastily worded emails saying, please stop that.
Yeah.
From Neil Patrick Harris.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He sends me a cease and desist letter. I'd be like, yeah. Send him back a letter that says, please do Dr. Horrible 2. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time to talk about the box office for this movie. So this movie got filmed on what I would call a very small budget. It got filmed on a budget of $40 million. So not like tiny budget, not indie film budget. We're not talking 4 rooms to the player, but a very small budget nonetheless. $40 million. And at the box office, it brought in $672.8 million. And it did a bunch on home video as well, which isn't included in that statistic. So it brought in 16 times its investment amount, which makes it the third most financially successful film out of all the movies that we've covered. And out of all the movies that we've covered, it would be the first one where it released using today's dollars as the metrics that would crack $1 billion for the revenue. So, yeah. Some momentous moments for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see as we go along and do other M. Night Shyamalan movies with Bruce Willis, Unbreakable, and others, if he is a star draw for those because of this pairing. Because I think people kind of associated Sixth Sense with both the two of them. So
yeah,
that'll be fun to compare when we get to that movie. Let's talk about Bruce Willis in particular. We've said some stuff about him so far. We can toss our couple notes about him right here. I thought he did a pretty good performance. I didn't, like Amy said, didn't think he was the greatest psychologist, but I liked seeing his angstier side, and we get to see him kind of unpacking and coming to terms with how things are, and we get to see him look lovingly at his wife when she's when they're making those wedding photos or wedding videos, and I enjoyed all that. Katie, what did you think of Bruce Willis's performance?
I thought he did a really great job. I think just being like a pretty, you know, regular person, like with flaws and things like that, just like balancing home life and work life. And yeah, I thought he was just a really believable and relatable character.
Awesome. Amy, how did you think this Bruce Willis compared to other Bruce Willis movies?
Yeah, I think he also did a solid job playing his role. But again, I think Haley Joel Osment just took it away from me. But yeah, I think Bruce Willis did a great job.
Would you, Amy, would you prefer this Bruce Willis? If you had to hang out with one of them, would you prefer this Bruce Willis or Die Hard Bruce Willis?
Die Hard Bruce Willis.
You don't want to hang out with a ghost?
Hands down. Oh, gosh.
I mean, you know, it's got benefits. He only sees what he wants to see, so he's not going to complain about anything.
You know?
About you.
Be pretty chilly.
I mean, he just
I
played
think
like
attractive, and I was like,
no,
dang.
It'd be cool.
He just kind of played a dry role for me, but I think he did a solid job at it. I don't think he was bad at it, but I don't think he'd had like a super outstanding performance. But this is also coming from a person that loves Die Hard, so.
Yeah, that's fair. We don't get to see him happy very much in this movie. We see him drunkenly happy at the beginning when he finds out that he was Philadelphia's son and he gets the award, but.
And he was kind of creepy, I feel like.
He was a little creepy, yeah.
Yeah.
During that, like, sleazy with his wife, I guess, but.
Yeah, and then he was pretty morose the rest of the movie. Yeah. Josh, what about you?
Yeah, I really like Bruce Willis in this movie. I don't think I like his performance as much as I like his performance in some of the other movies that I have really highly ranked. But I thought that he did a very good job.
Yeah. A couple trivia tidbits to let you know that I found out about this movie. Bruce Willis would DJ for the cast and crew after filming for this movie, and apparently gave M. Night Shyamalan his very first hangover. He would throw these big parties. They would have these parties, and Bruce Willis would be making a great party atmosphere, and M. Night Shyamalan said that he just kept handing him shots, saying, here's a piece of candy, here's a piece of candy. And then the next morning, he woke up with a splitting headache and didn't know what was going on. He didn't know why he felt so bad.
That's amazing.
And felt terrible, and Bruce Willis was just laughing over and over again. So, yeah, I guess the fact that they made more movies means that he was pretty fun to work with. You hear a lot about Bruce Willis being a difficult actor to work with, and that's definitely true. I think it's nice to see some of these stories where you can kind of see him livening up the group. He definitely, it seemed like he enjoyed making this movie. He didn't just phone in this performance.
No, he mm-hmm. did not. And mm-hmm. that's honestly a little bit miraculous considering the circumstances surrounding him taking on this role. But he did a great job with this role, I thought.
Yeah, why don't you go into detail on the circumstances?
So, as far as the circumstances go, he was contractually obligated to do this movie and two other movies, I believe, with Disney. And Disney was the one that put on this movie, even though it's like Hollywood Pictures. No, that's Disney. it was... He backed out of a movie called Broadway Brawler that we talked about, I think, during Armageddon. So... Armageddon, I believe, was the first one, and then that he did based on that contract, and then this movie, and then Unbreakable was the last one, right?
Oh, really? I didn't know that those were linked up like that, but that's interesting. I do remember the Broadway Brawler connection for why he did this movie. I remember that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was the case with it. I'm going to go look it up really quick. But yeah, the fact that he backed out of another movie and then it somehow ended up being for the best for all parties involved, and he put on a good performance too, I think just says a lot about this point in time in Bruce Willis's career. I feel like he's kind of maybe leveling out a little bit and coming down off of his high horse just a smidgen, based on like what we've seen from him. I think that his acting has generally gotten better. I think that he seems to be trying a little bit more in these movies, and he's putting in pretty consistent performances. So... yeah, it was I liked what he brought in a lot. And yes, I just looked it up, and yeah, he did a 3-picture deal with Disney in order to absorb the cost of Broadway Brawler, and it was Armageddon, Sixth Sense, and Unbreakable. So good job, Bruce.
Huh. Yeah. Probably for the best. Broadway Brawler did not sound like a big hit.
It didn't sound like a winner.
And I think he actually took a pay, or he didn't make much movie, didn't make much on this movie, if that's correct.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. I think his pay rate was like $10 million, which is about half of what he was asking for at the time. So he took a pay cut and did better work than what he's done in movies where he's been paid more. So mm-hmm. good job, buddy.
Yeah. Okay, anybody have anything else I want to shout out about the movie in general before we move on?
I don't think so.
Amy, any closing thoughts?
Let me look at my notes. Nope. I just want to say also, like, I was sad. I felt sad a lot of the time for the movie because I just, yeah. I felt bad for Cole.
Yeah, for sure.
The
yeah.
circumstances.
He didn't choose to see dead people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good thriller, not a good feel-good movie.
It's no The Lobster.
Oh, Lord. I knew you were going to bring that up.
I kid. That movie's also not a great feel-good movie.
Has Josh seen The Lobster?
I don't know. Josh, have you seen the movie The Lobster?
I haven't yet, but... I was just thinking that if we started a Joaquin Phoenix podcast, I would finally figure out how to spell his name because we would rate it out of a Joaquin Phoenix.
I don't think Joaquin Phoenix is in The Lobster, but we could still rate that movie.
What?
Joaquin Phoenix out of Joaquin Phoenix.
Wait, what? What am I thinking of then?
It's Colin Farrell, isn't it?
What? I thought that it was. I thought that it. What? Oh no! What am I thinking of? I saw a handsome mustachioed man, and I assumed that it was Joaquin.
Katie's gonna start a Colin Farrell podcast, but just skip that one.
No, I'm gonna start a Please Don't Watch the Lobster and Waste Your Life podcast.
Wow.
Terrible.
I'm looking forward to subscribing to this.
10 episodes. Okay.
Yeah, 10 episodes. One for each letter in the lobster. I don't know how many letters does the lobster have. One for each time Joaquin Phoenix shows up. okay. Joshua.
Yeah.
Amy.
Yes.
Amy. Katie.
Yes.
It's time to rank the Bruce Willis film among our other Bruce Willis films. So I don't know how many films you've seen. So you can kind of give it a top five, bottom five, middle of the road line as far as your movies, Bruce Willis movies go. I will start with my ranking, and I will say that this is the 30th film, correct, Josh? 30th?
Yep.
30th film we're covering, so that doesn't include some of the smaller stuff that we did little bonus episodes for, and it doesn't include things like Moonlighting and so on. It doesn't unfortunately include Beavis and Butthead, which will probably forever be at the bottom. But that said, I think The Sixth Sense is going to go in the fifth spot for me. I wanted to put it in the sixth just for the great, alliteration, but I think it's going to go in the fifth for me. Katie, where would you say The Sixth Sense lines up for your...
Oh, and just for listeners, what's above Sixth Sense for you, Kendrick?
Oh, sorry, yeah. So I said Sixth Sense is fifth. That means... My listing, top six would be 12 Monkeys, Fifth Element, Pulp Fiction, Die Hard, then The Sixth Sense. So, Katie, where would you put this movie in your general Bruce Willis lineup?
Yeah, I haven't seen all these movies, so like I haven't seen 12 Monkeys, which I might just have to do tonight because you guys rate it so highly, both of you, which is pretty impressive. And but I would definitely say, yeah, probably top five for me, maybe second or third.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Would you say you like it better or worse or about the same as Die Hard? Which I think is probably, I assume you've seen Die Hard, but that's kind of his other big.
Right, yeah. I do like Die Hard a lot. They're just so different, but...
Yeah.
I guess it just depends on what mood I'm in, which one I would think would be better.
Okay, Amy, what about you?
If I had a list of 10, I'd probably also put it at 5, like right in the middle.
Oh, right in the middle?
Yeah. Gotcha.
So you probably like Die Hard more, I take it.
Yes, good guess, Kendrick.
And Death Becomes Her. She loves Death Becomes Her as well.
Yeah. And Look Who's Talking To.
I'm sorry. Just look kidding. Who's Talking To or Look Who's Talking Also? Like, what are you talking about here? No, I'm serious. Are you defending Look Who's Talking To or are you defending Who's Talking?
I just threw that out there. I haven't seen either.
Oh, okay. I was like... getting my blood boiling. I had the opposite of ghosts in here. I was getting, this room is heating up. It was like,
oh, I definitely listened to that episode.
What's funny is Josh liked Look Who's Talking To more than me.
No. Mine is second to worst on my list.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah. Josh, where would you put The Sixth Sense in your 30 movies that we've talked about?
So I don't want this to be a thing where I have like recency bias, but I think it's going to be my number one. And I might move this.
Wow.
I know. I might move this later. But I really appreciated. I love movies that walk the line between multiple genres and have multiple lines going through it. And this movie, it nails all of the heartfelt lines with Bruce Willis and coming to grips with being dead and coming to grips with losing his marriage and falling back in love with the person that he's kind of fallen away from. And that's not even the main part of the movie, but it's so, so powerful and it's all done really great. The kid is really great. He's so good interacting with all of the other adults who are around him. There's his scenes with Bruce Willis are really, really good together. And as I've praised the way that the camera is used to like hide a bunch of different things, I think is really clever. And I think that this is a movie that surpasses basically all these other movies as far as like the use of the camera itself and the art of filmmaking in order to tell a story that goes above and beyond just a story of what you could read on paper or what you could tell to somebody or show on stage. Like, this is a thing that has to be done in camera because it only really works there. And I love it. I think it's really, really good. So yeah, I'm putting it at my number one. I might move it down a little bit later on as I think about it more, and especially if I watch it again. But yeah, right now it's going to go to my number one spot.
That's awesome. It's exciting when people can experience, you know, new things like this and love them so much.
Yeah. Well, it was great getting to watch that for the first time and not having had it spoiled to me. Like, I knew the line, "I see dead people," and I assumed that that was like the spoiler, but that's just a famous line. That's not even the spoiler.
No, that's part of the plot summary kind of gives that away.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Josh.
Yeah.
I think that only leaves the rest of the show to talk about. And by that, I mean, do you know what time it is?
Let me ask my good friend Kendrick, who has a watch that specializes in timings.
Very good. I don't know why it's become this shtick that we have where we just have to continually pretend like we don't want to unleash the next section.
Yeah.
Like, we just talk around it for a long time, and I don't know why. It's become our way. But
it has.
It's the build-up.
Yeah, it's build-up. So, it is time for the Wheel of Willis.
The Wheel of Willis!
What we do each episode is we spin the Wheel of Willis, and if you want to submit a suggestion for the Wheel of Willis, you can email us, williswaypod@gmail.com. We've gotten a lot of suggestions from a lot of people. And then we will each answer that question, however silly or nonsensical it may be.
That is correct. Kendrick, Amy, and Katie, do you know what we say every time we spin the Wheel of Willis?
Oh, yes.
Every time, in unison, we shout,
Whiz!
That was terrible. It cut off on my end.
All right. Oh, wow. This is a tough one. Okay. This question is, would this movie be better if Taika Waititi directed it?
Oh.
This was actually my suggestion for the Willis wheel.
Wow.
I know. Well,
we know I can finally give credit.
We finally know who submitted one.
Well, thank you, Katie, for sending in the suggestion.
You're welcome. But this movie is actually a hard question for this, because I think across the board, it would almost always be yes.
Yeah.
But this movie in particular, it might, it's a, more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every movie short of like Pulp Fiction, 12 Monkeys, and The Sixth Sense, I'd say it's like an easy yes,
mm-hmm.
for sure, no doubt about it. But yeah, this one's a tricky one.
I guess I associate Taika with like kind of sillier movies. Am I missing any like thrillers that he's done?
The Seventh Sense? No,
I was thrilled that Thor wasn't bad, so I don't know if that counts.
A different kind of thrill.
No, you're 100% correct in that he always has a bit of wit and humor in his movies, even though they can have a sad element or a serious element
mm-hmm.
to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or even maybe some a little suspense, I guess, but by far and away they are more tongue in cheek mm-hmm. Comedy. So I don't think I would say yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, I'm also going to say no, unfortunately. I love Taika, but there's a reason that M. Night is famous for this movie, and it's because he did a great job.
And it's just his, like, classic style, you know? Like, it was, like, the first one of this where it, like, twisted. But I would be so interested to see the movie that Taika would come up with this story. So I'm going to say yes. I think he could come up with something great because he's really good at twists too.
Fair. Taika also, we didn't really talk about this, but he also includes himself as cameos in a lot of his movies. And M. Night Shyamalan does also. So I don't know if Hitchcock was the first person to do that, but I feel like they're often who's kind of the homage is given to when a director includes himself. But I would definitely watch it for sure. But whether or not it'd be as good, I feel like I can't really say. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Where There's a Willis, There's a Way. Again, you can send us an email, williswaypod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media @williswaypod. See all the hilarious jokes we post. Hop on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a star rating. Those are great ways for podcasts to get more attention. At the end of our podcasts, we have been dropping off some sweet treats. So these are little suggestions we can give you to brighten up your week about anything that we want them to be. So, Katie, do you have a sweet treat for our listeners?
I'm going to go with the Taika Waititi theme and go with Reservation Dogs, his new HBO show that he's come out with.
Awesome. I have seen that show a little bit and it is quite good. Amy, do you have a sweet treat to recommend this week?
Yeah, today I kind of had a downer day, but a little bit of agua fresca this afternoon really brightened my day.
Wow, that's great. I don't drink agua fresca very much at all. So it's good call out. Joshua, how about you?
I'm going to shout out another podcast that is hosted by somebody that lives near us in our same general area. There's somebody that I helped out the other day, and their podcast is called Let's Talk Turkeys. I thought that it was going to be a podcast about, like, turkeys, the bird. Kendrick thought that it was about bowling, and it's about neither. It's about movies that bombed and other movies that they like talking about. So it was fun. I was listening to one that they did the other day about one of the Wayans brothers movies, and I am blanking on the name of it. But they've also talked about Clue and a bunch of other stuff. And so I, of course, asked them to talk about Hudson Hawk, and they said that they have that slated for next year. So look forward to that next year.
Wow, they have their podcasts planned out in years and ahead of time.
Yeah, Well, they also do two podcast episodes a week, which I can't even imagine. We do one a week and we're like exhausted. So yeah. Oh yeah. So the movie that they were talking about was A Low Down Dirty Shame. That was the one that they just released.
Nice. So yeah. Let's Talk Turkeys, the podcast. I'm going to recommend a board game called Deep Sea Adventures. It's a little tiny Japanese board game. Packs up in a box about the size of a playing card deck. It's for 2 to 6 players, I believe. Super fast. I like learned it and played it with my wife in about 30 minutes. And great fun. Again, that's the game Deep Sea Adventures. Katie and Amy, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. It has been wonderful talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Do y'all rehearse that? That was
great. We did.
We can't line up to whisk that wheel for the life of us, but boy, everything else works out just great. This has been a lot of fun. It's been nice talking to you about this movie. I'm glad you picked a really good movie to talk about. When you said you wanted to talk about this movie, I was like, oh, I remember that movie. It'll be fun. But yeah, there's been a lot to discuss, so that's been good.
Super. Yeah, thank you both for coming on. Do either of you guys want to plug some stuff that you're working on, other places people could follow you if they're interested in checking out your other work?
Sure. I have a Instagram that I sell macrame artwork from. It is at macrame for you. It's just macrame with a D for you. And yeah, check it out.
Awesome.
I don't have anything personally, but just plugging in DK_bakes at Instagram. Looks like he made some really good treats this past weekend. And also plugging in Katie's macrame. Beautiful stuff.
Yep. I have enjoyed both of those things in my life, both DK Bakes and Macrame for You. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter at KMartinix. That's KMartinix.
And you can find me on Twitter at Joshing Carter.
We are going to be taking a break for a few weeks, so I'm not sure when we'll be back, and I'm not sure when or what our next movie will be when we come back. But if you follow the aforementioned multiple social medias, you'll probably find out. Or just subscribe to this podcast feed, and you'll just drop right into your old phone.
Yeah, exactly. It pops on in, and it goes, hey, it's a new podcast. And then you go, okay. And that's how technology works.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's the benefit of doing it that way and not just randomly looking us up every so often.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Yeah, thank you both Katie and Amy for coming on. It was great getting to talk with you. I liked hearing your perspectives on the movie for sure.
It was so much fun.
Yeah. All right.
Well, have a good day time, everybody.
Yeah, have a good day time. We'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, yes, it's fun time.
And if you mess up a sentence, it is perfectly fine to just clear your throat and then start the whole sentence over again. Don't try to pick up where you flubbed it, because then it's impossible to cut it together. But if you start it over again, then we can fix it. So.
But also, like, don't stress too much, because
it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've heard the podcast.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean,
what's that?
Dang!
I love the podcast. I'm always laughing out loud.